against the world. Sometimes it feels like you and me against the world. When all the others turn their backs and walk away, you can count on me to stay.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gloria Steinem, who is the founder of Ms. Magazine and the co-founder of the Women's Media Center and an active member of Equality Now. She is the subject of a new HBO documentary that airs Monday, Gloria in Her Own Words. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gloria Steinem.
Thank you so much.
And in your own words, Gloria, this is not your movie. In other words, somebody else made this movie about you.
Yes, it was scary. I mean, but these are excellent documentary makers whose work I knew. Sheila Nevins at Home Box Office is the queen of documentaries. You know, I think she has won many more Academy Awards than anyone else in the world. So I was honored to be asked, and I thought, okay, I'll just jump off the cliff. So I just answered questions as honestly as I could, and sort of tried to look at each tree and let them figure out what the forest looked like.
And there is no narrator, is there?
No. It actually, the earlier and first one was done about Senator Ted Kennedy, called In His Own Words. Hmm. And it is an interesting format. I had seen it like that. It does give you a much better sense of knowing someone.
So a lot of the reviewers have said that this film is valuable in as much as a new generation of young women in this country don't appreciate the struggle that you and others went through and began. And is feminism taken for granted amongst the young?
Well, I hope so. No, I mean, the point is not people to make, not to make young women or young men grateful. Gratitude never radicalized anybody. We need to know our history, because otherwise we tend to be told that we were given these things. You know, that's what came down to me. Women were given the vote. That was the whole sentence in my textbook. So it's terribly important to know how change happened in the past so we can continue to make it. But I did not walk around saying thank you for the vote. I got mad because of what was happening to me, and I think that's what happens to young women too, and it's why there are actually, you know, many, many, many more feminists now than there were in the past. If you look at the public opinion polls, it's these issues are majority concerns when they weren't even named before.
So let me ask you, though, about the current political climate, at least as it appears. We had recently a economic hostage crisis in London, in Washington, D.C., entirely manufactured by the right wing of the Republican Party, who appear to have captured the Republican Party and, more importantly, captured the national policy. Forcing the president to essentially sign off on a really lousy deal that is going to hurt the economy and hurt the Democrats' chances of being reelected. So I don't see an active left or even an active center in the country. So what explains the ascendance of the right in this country? And after all, Michelle Bachmann just won in Minnesota. And, you know, I suppose the good news there is that she's made Sarah Palin irrelevant, right?
Well, there's a big difference between what is going on in public opinion polls and what is going on in political life in Washington. Most people think taxes should be increased for those that can pay. You know, most people actually want more government services, not fewer government services. So what we're seeing in Washington is the capture of one of the two big political parties, the Republican Party, by what is actually at the peak a third of the country, and it's usually much less. Many of them used to be Democrats, like the Jesse Helmses of the world, and left, fled the Democratic Party in the South when it became too racially integrated for them, and gradually over time took over the structure of the Republican Party. And I agree with you that this is incredibly dangerous, because if people look at the media, they think issues are 50-50 when they're really 70-30. And if you're fed up with the Democrats, which we often are, there's no place to go except this extremist-controlled party. So it's incredibly dangerous. But it does not mean there's not a very active, caring majority in this country.
Well, the 82% of the American people felt that the deal that we just were talking about, the debt ceiling deal, was a lousy deal, and that they think jobs should be a priority and not cutting the deficits. So
yeah, so I think it's terribly important not to blame people for what isn't their fault. It only makes us feel more disempowered, but to say what we can do about it. I mean, I devoutly hope that real Republicans of the Rockefeller and other, I mean, it's especially true for women Republicans, you know, because the Republican Party used to be much more in favor of female equality, the Equal Rights Amendment, and so on, than the Democratic Party was. Now they've been deserted by their party. But we have to take back the Republican Party so that it's centrist again and a real alternative.
But I was curious, though, about the disconnect between the people and the government. And I'm wondering if that is to do with the capture of our politics by money, where money is more powerful than votes and people. And it seems to me that in many ways we should be having a national debate upon the very nature of our democracy, whether or not we've become a plutocracy.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And I know I was looking at the figures at the beginning of the women's movement. I think the average CEO made 70 times the average employee, and now it's 1,000 times. I mean, you know, we are more divided into rich and poor than any other modern democracy in the world, and this is a huge shame and an enormous danger. But it does not relieve us of responsibility, because the one place in the world where a pauper and a millionaire are equal, where, you know, the least powerful person is in the voting booth. And to the extent that this all could have been avoided by 10% more voters, we have to take responsibility and organize better next time.
Again, I'm speaking with Gloria Steinem, who is the subject of the new HBO documentary that airs Monday, Gloria, in her own words. And in terms of the growing disparity in wealth in the country, let's talk about the employment disparity, particularly with women, in terms of equal pay. Where does that stand? Because So, as you know, my daughter's in medical school, and there are more women in her class than men, and I believe that's the case in a lot of law schools around the country. So there's a mixed message here.
Well, actually, there are about half of undergraduates now who are female, women go to get a BA in order to get out of the pink-collar ghetto and into the white-collar ghetto. But it's still, I mean, actually, if they entered a male working class, blue collar, unionized occupation, say if they became an electrician or a plumber, they would make more money than they would with a BA. So there's still a big gender divide, and it's part of the reason that, depends on the part of the country you're in, but the women earn something like 78 cents on the dollar that men earn. But I think you see it especially painfully, I'm glad you talked about college, because one of the great shames of this country is that we don't have free public education, as is mostly the case in Europe. So kids are graduating from college with more collective debt than the entire credit card debt of this nation. Now, that's bad for everybody, women and men, but it's especially bad for women, because a woman with a BA degree over her lifetime will earn $2 million less than a man with a BA degree. So it's much harder for her. It's hard enough for a guy. It shouldn't be true for anybody, but it's even harder for women to pay back their college debt.
Well, that phenomenon, though, I think has a lot to do with the Republican efforts at privatization, where the government, big government, is the enemy. But what they've in fact done is they've created a kind of racket where what it's really going on is the transfer of public money into private hands, and that the taxpayer is getting hosed. For-profit education in this country takes up $40 billion of taxpayers' money. A lot of these schools are absolute scams. They give these kids worthless education, worthless diplomas, and pile them with debt, because essentially what they do is they take government money that they get for next to nothing and charge that money back to these kids with incredible interest rates that indenture them for life. And of course, they have no employment opportunities because their education was totally fictional.
No, you're absolutely right. Actually, I was sitting next to, I spent a lot of time on planes, you know, so I have lots of plane conversations. And I was sitting next to a very right-wing guy who was quite honest. And he said, you know, what we want to do is to create a cheap labor supply here because we don't want to have to rely on foreigners.
They're doing a hell of a job.
You're right.
But no, you have to add to that that they're also dumbing the population down.
That summed it up.
Yeah.
And of course, especially under Bush, but also altogether, we've been selling off the government one function at a time. The idea that for-profit corporations can run prisons, for instance, that Wackenhut or somebody can run, you know, is ridiculous and cruel. And it's why some of the Abu Ghraib guards, remember Abu Ghraib from Iraq, came from Texas, because Bush was a pioneer in selling off prisons and making them profit centers, which meant they got less and less good guards and less good services and were more and more likely to release people even more motivated to break the law.
Just in the last few minutes, I'd like to turn to work that you do, Gloria Steinem, that people aren't aware of, and that is in terms of environmental protection and also the protection of endangered human species like the Kalahari Bushmen. But in specifically, you mentioned George W. Bush. Of course, the current South Korean president is often referred to as Korea's George W. Bush, or he's otherwise known as Mr. Bulldozer, since he comes out of the construction business. And there is an island that you visited and written about south of South Korea. That's a World Heritage Site that's about to be turned into a missile base aimed at China, not North Korea, and the people there are fighting back heroically.
Yes, the great heroes of this battle are the people of Jeju Island, which is at the southern tip of South Korea, who, especially in the area of the naval base where the fishing village, the government had tried to impose it on two other villages who said no, and finally they just imposed it on one no matter what. And those people have been living along the shoreline in tents for 4 years in order to safeguard the land and the soft coral reef and all of the great environmental and cultural advantages that belong to all of us on this earth. And because they have been living there and they have become this magnetic place, I was there 11 years ago before, 9 years ago before this started, so I had some familiarity with the island. When I went back in May, I went to see these demonstrators, and I discovered there was a young couple of documentarians there who had come just to visit and had been staying for 6 weeks with only the clothes on their back. There was a young Frenchman with us who stayed and is still there. I mean, you know, this is an incredibly important magnetic issue that is the kind of thing we'll be judged on in centuries to come. The South Korean government says, I don't know whether it believes or not, but says that this is for the protection of South Korea from North Korea, which isn't true at all. It has no protection because the missiles would be too low and too difficult to stop. It really is part of our Aegis, AEGIS missile system that is designed to surround China, and China has very much objected to, naturally. So it's both a dangerous provocation in the arms race, a destruction of the environment, and a destruction of this island, which, like all very, very old cultures, was egalitarian, was matrilineal, was, you know, still has some of that tradition. So all the movements have that I know of have coincided in trying to fight this missile base, and yet it's really not in the news. I wrote an New York Times op-ed page piece about it. You can go online and just type in Save Jeju Island, and you'll find a petition to object to it.
And Jeju is J-E-J-U.
J-E-J-U,
Jeju Island, right. Well, the way you describe the place is just magical. You know, in your op-ed, green hills covered with wildflowers, mandarin orange groves, nutmeg forests, tea plantations, and rare orchids growing wild. I'm afraid we've run out of time. Here I am going on. Thank you so much for joining us, Gloria.
Thank you so much, Ian, and thank you for what you do. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Gloria Steinem, who is the founder of Ms. Magazine and the co-founder of the Women's Media Center and an active member of Equality Now. She is the subject of a new HBO documentary that airs Monday, Gloria in Her Own Words. So what did we learn on today's background briefing? Well, we began talking with Lawrence Jacobs, who is the director of the Center for Study of Politics and Governance at the University of Minnesota, and of course the Minnesota twins, Michelle Bachmann and Governor Pawlenty, were pretty much the focus of attention in the Iowa straw poll and the Republican candidate debate that preceded it. And of course Michelle Bachmann was the winner, and Pawlenty just pulled out of the race, and we were looking into whether or not Bachmann was a viable national candidate, and at the very least, the default position would be perhaps that she could end up as vice president. If, for example, a Romney won and needed to balance the ticket with somebody that would please the base. Now, those calculations may be kind of out the window because of the possibility of the governor of Texas, Perry, essentially making Bachmann irrelevant. But Jacobs didn't think so. He thought she was a serious and formidable candidate. He certainly wouldn't write her off. Then we talked about who are the opposition in Libya. A lot of people have been concerned about them from day one, whether it's a good idea to give arms and money to these people. We don't know who they are. I talked to State Department Specialist Intelligence Bureau guy from the INR, Wayne White, who essentially made it even more pessimistic, I think, that not only do we quite know who they are, whether the Islamists killed the general in their ranks recently. But the long and short of it is, he said that the rebels in the West are really being effective and getting no support. The rebels in the East are totally useless. And he thinks that the rebels in the West, Berbers in particular, will eventually take Tripoli, and then they'll do all the fighting. And then the guys in the East that we've been supporting and that NATO's been supporting will then try to come into town. And the Western guys will say, no, we won the war. And thus you will have the contours of a civil war. And then finally, Gloria Steinem joined us. Just a total pleasure to speak with her. HBO has a new documentary coming out on Monday called Gloria in Her Own Words. And we spoke about that documentary, which she had nothing to do with, but content of the documentary. But then we talked a lot about stuff that she does that people don't know about, which is her works on the environment, trying to save an island off the coast of Korea and the Kalahari Bushmen. I'm Ian Masters. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassida. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.